Your claws together for a villain most cruel, cause this time he's here to rule.
Hello everyone, welcome to the first episode of what I would like to call Behind the Content, where, like Behind the Dub, I speak to content creators about the content they make, and today I've got a rather special episode as to why I'm in a treehouse, all will become apparent very soon. Ah, Donkey Kong Country, perhaps one of my favourite games from the SNES. I spent many hours falling off minecart tracks and getting stung by giant bees, but perhaps I'm starting a bit ahead of myself. One day, whilst going around the usual rounds of the internet, on YouTube, I was recommended this video, Curse of the Crystal Coconut. I thought to myself, oh, this looks interesting. I do have a soft spot for anthro-scaly creatures. I'll give this a watch. I swiftly learned that this was a fan-made, not-for-profit video based on Donkey Kong Country. I thought Curse of the Crystal Coconut was an excellently animated video focusing on some Kremlings from the game using a song from this band called Ailstorm, which I had heard about being a fan of dinosaur metal. Pirate metal isn't exactly a million miles away. I noticed that the recommended to me was the latest video, Return to Crocodile Isle. This is when the rabbit hole had taken me into its depths. It turns out that whilst this is based on Donkey Kong Country, it's more based on an animated series of the same name based on the game, which I had never heard of. And the song in Curse of the Crystal Coconut is actually a cover of a song from the animated series called Pirate Scorn.
I'll make you smoke the deck and then I'll throw you in the brig. I swear I'll make you walk the plank to right the wrong you did. The day you mess with scurvy, all you wish you'll ever mourn. When the coconut is mine, then you'll feel this pirate's horn.
Which Ailstorm covered in their album called Curse of the Crystal Coconut. Why is this starting to get surprisingly more complex the more I look into it? So, following all that, I got to talk to Alex Henderson, Martin Liss, and Stuart Hudson of Bootleg Dub Productions just to see what insanity caused them to create not one, but two fantastic videos based in this universe.
Well, my name is Martin Liss. I'm the runner of Bootleg Dub Productions. My sort of fortes focus more on like the sound and any kind of the financial side where we collaborate with animators. For Return to Crocodile Isle, I served as the director, writer, and producer, as well as like some other things here and there.
And I'm Alex Henderson. I did the animation, the visuals, like background storyboarding, like everything visually. Well, most of the visuals were done by me. We had a couple of other artists doing some background stuff and helping out. And I also did like some story editing just to kind of keep things. Since I'm the one with the most experience doing like animation, I kind of knew how to best interpret the story for animation. So I helped out a bit with that.
Quite cool. Mm-hmm. Just even just the story editing part, because I thought you were just the animated. You actually had a role in the story flow, shall we say.
I helped just kind of, I had my own ideas for the direction it would go in and we all kind of collaborated on it. So I had some input. Yeah.
Stuart, it's your
and
turn.
Then, yep. And I'm Stuart. I am a co-producer, voice actor. I voiced Crusha, Kaboom, Swanky, and then I was the intro narrator for the song. I'm basically like a creative consultant. So I was kind of the guy who everyone would come to as far as like crippling lore and such, and just kind of make sure everything was in line, and then just general ideas guy as well. Me and Martin
so
would bounce stuff
ideas.
Exactly, yeah. And Martin, Alex, and I would just bounce ideas off of each other and then kind of see whatever sticks, and then we kind of made an initial pitch over to Uncle Al, and he came up and formulated the script, which became the outline for what we ended up with.
So many rewrites with the
union
involved. Oh, yeah.
Well, I suppose that the first main question that I would like to ask you all is, what on earth possessed you to even start this? And I'm talking like before Crocodile Isle, what caused you to make Crystal Coconut and such?
Well, Crocodile Isle was kind of what you guys set out to do originally. Like, But we hit some kind of bits of delays along the way, and I kind of made Curse of the Crystal Coconut in the meantime.
Yeah.
So like Crocodile Isle was actually the first one, but it came out afterwards. So
yeah, it's a bit of an interesting story with this one. Stuart and myself, we've known each other since like what, 2010 or something, Stu? We've been like
we were both
amateur voice actors trying to go into like different stuff here and there. And I remember like we just got involved like in a lot of different fan projects and things like that. And during the course of the pandemic, I kind of had this incentive that just like anyone else in the pandemic, we all kind of went into like a weird little crisis
hobby mode.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm trying to figure out what to do. So my first project actually was not an animation project per se, but I wanted to just to get my mind off of like, you know, the state of the world as is, I wanted to like go out and create something ambitious. And I was a huge fan of the F-Zero franchise, like the games and whatnot. Mm. And the 30th anniversary was kind of coming up around this era. So I wanted to like dedicate the year to making something unique for the community. And I've always worked alongside people in like different Abridge series, radio drums. And I kind of wanted, what if I were to use the expertise of like my sound expertise, kind of working with direction and like voice direction and casting and writing and all that sort of thing. So what initially said was my first setup thing to do was I made like a high caliber, probably the most expensive fan dub ever made of the last episode of the F-Zero anime. I got a lot of like my good voice acting friends involved, some, you know, actual voice actors from the game. I did like pretty much all the sound from scratch, got like the sound effects done from scratch with Resound, who's been our go-to guys for anything sound effects related, for including with Alex's projects, and made a whole new soundtrack. Somehow I think people started to know me as the guy that just seemed to get people because somehow he could, and that included like composers from the movie Red Line, which, you know, always resonated with F-Zero for me. And somehow I got Jamie Christofferson from Metal Gear Rising fame to actually do a couple tracks in the dub, which I didn't even think was possible, but I just asked. And when it came out, I just kind of found this initiated passion in doing this stuff. And I think Stuart was like a very big collaborator of mine working with this, with the, you know, the scripting and also voicing my interpretation of Black Shadow, which, you know, everyone was like really happy with the voiceover. When me and Stuart kind of started chatting afterwards, we were thinking, you know, we could, like, with the kind of like stuff that we've done, we could go a little bit bigger with this. And we wanted to work a little bit more with original animation based off of games that have been like dormant for a while and could use a little extra attention. So Donkey Kong hasn't had much attention in a while, and K. Rool, outside of this Smash thing that kind of went on, was kind of lying dormant. So we were kind of thinking this crazy idea of, what if we just did like an original animation and, you know, bring back like some old school nostalgia along the way. And we were kind of templating above like how to go about with this. And how did this start off, Stuart? We were constantly joking about getting Benedict Campbell involved in the project. And then one day I actually decided that we should message him. And
yeah, that's pretty much how it went.
yeah. Like he had a,
like, hey, he's got a, I think I found it. His Twitter is what it was. I found his Twitter, and I was
like, maybe like what, like once every 3 years?
Yeah, once in a blue moon, Ben will go to his, he'll crawl out of his hole and he'll check his Twitter, and then that's where it goes. But I ended up messaging him because we were, Martin and I were talking, and we were just like, hey, it might be worth it just to shoot him a line. And I was like, yeah, okay, maybe. So I went ahead and I typed something up and sent it to him in a private message, and it was probably about, I want to say, a month or two later, I finally got a reply back, and he was essentially saying, yeah, go ahead and contact my agent. And then he gave me the contact info.
Yeah. And from there, that whole thing kind of stemmed up with, actually getting the actor union involved, because it turns out, a lot of the voice actors over here in Toronto, Canada, which ironically, you know, also reside in, which kind of made some of the, you know, negotiations a little bit easier. The thing is, they have like a lot of strict guidelines as to how things are going to go. Like, if we wanted to get any voice actors outside of like their union, we had to pay permits and also do research on the kind of laws on like, you know, workers' compensation
on each of them on like how to get them to be working. So I had to like do like crazy research with each of the states and, you know, work around with getting a script together so we would act, because we had so many characters we kind of planned initially with this, and then we had to like limit it, and we weren't even sure if some of the voice actors would be able to like make it initially because we just wanted K. Rool, but it turns out that the other ones were kind of available too. So this was kind of like a big moment where it's just like, this is a lot of things kind of hitting at once. And around the time we me and Stuart have absolutely like no songwriting experience, but so to say. And we initially were just thinking it was just gonna be like one of those typical let's make it like a parody of like You'll Be Back by Hamilton with our own little twist of the lyrics. And then we kind of were just you know, working through with this, and then Alex, you know, gutsy Alex, is like, why don't you just make an original song? And then me and Stuart looked at each other and we were like, we have no idea how to. But, you know, we kind of started, you know, chatting up with his composer, Josh, and I kind of realized this was going to take a lot longer than we thought it would. And Alex pitched the idea that I'm an Alestorm fan myself. I listened to, like, their stuff from back then, and I wasn't until, like, much later on I realized that they actually made an album and a song based off of, like, the Donkey Kong Country show, Curse of the Pirate Scorn. And their album, poetically, was named Curse of the Crystal Coconut. So Alex got involved in the conversation with us and kind of mentioned, you know, we want to work with like maybe getting some visuals out and at least get the models done, get an idea of what kind of, you know, like have a little appetizer test to gauge the kind of interest people would have. So we were like, okay, well, you know, I worked entirely on sound on F-Zero. Curse of the Crystal Coconut, I had a bit more of a, I didn't have like as much of a directing role. It was like more so just like looking through, approving the shots as like the executive and helping kind of like pitch in a little bit for Alex's well-made work. But I think it was a great way to not only understand, you know, Alex's side of how he animates things and what kind of like how different a script is when you're working with like an original animation and like his mix of 2D and 3D, but it also just gave me an idea to utilize and understand like, you know, the visual aspect after my expertise with my sound on F-Zero, and actually put both of these knowledges together and somehow made Return to Crocodile all at what it was, which was both based on original sound and visuals. So I think it just really worked out for the best.
It does sound just like a fascinating combination of different elements coming in. Yeah, because one thing I was going to ask, because I discovered Crystal Coconut after I saw Crocodile Isle, and then I saw that, oh, it was a song from Alestorm. Okay, and then I found out, wait, no, it's a cover from this animated series which I'd never heard of. I had never known until a couple of days ago that Donkey Kong Country even had an animated series. So I grew up in the UK.
So you really felt
Nintendo that likes to bury it.
it just never existed to me. And it was like, what is this? And I just, straight down that the rabbit hole, as I said. And then I found out that for Crocodile, you got Benedict Campbell and a whole bunch of other voice talent from this show. And I'm like, I've never seen this show. Was it something that that you guys grew up with, or is it just something that just happened to...
Yeah, it was a regular thing over here in Canada, at least, where me and Alex are in. And like in between, you know, infomercials about like, you know, the house hippo not being real and a whole bunch of other fun. Honestly, it's a whole lot of crazy context. It's just weird commercials. Canada is very weird. We should also mention that, you know, what was it that you put in the original headline? It was the Canadian government that funded for Donkey Kong Country animated series to be made, Alex?
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure our tax dollars helped fund that show, yeah.
Yeah, there was like, because it was some kind of program that went on to increase, you know, animated programs for children, and Donkey Kong Country was ironically one of them, funded by, you know, Canadian tax dollars and the audacity of the French.
It's just insane. I did look into some bits of the series because they are sort of available on YouTube, and I'm just like, this is weird. I've never started to, because all my experience of Donkey Kong Country was the games. I had it on the SNES. You know, I remember playing it and dying a lot in the original Donkey Kong Country, and that was kind of it. That was always my knowledge of
the franchise as a whole. And one thing I was picking up on when I was watching Crocodile Isle is just there's a lot of meta contextual references in it. It is just jam-packed. Every time I rewatched it, and I've rewatched it a lot, is...
we purposely make it so you need to rewatch it 10 to 12 times.
Layers.
So many different things I was picking up on. It's stuff in the background, stuff in the lyrics, what they're saying. It's just like, wow, you're like mega fans. This is so packed in detail that I never would have picked up on any of it without having to, you know, open my eyes and pay attention to
it. You have a personal favorite one?
this is more of an animation one, but the one that... this is just a gag that cracks me up every single time. It's just like, oh, why are we celebrating a decade-long abscess and the eyes are going different directions? That cracks me up every time.
Yeah, that was my doing.
All Alex, baby.
And but there's like, I heard it was a higher power that determined that we, and by proxy us, and that is like,
yeah,
like, what? We're unable to coexist. I was like, with our wow, this rifle. Is a deep cut.
Yeah, it was a back then when people were thinking that Microsoft, during the whole Rareware transaction, bought the rights to the Kremlings and Nintendo didn't want to use them. So we kind of figured, you know, nice way to kind of mesh the two together. And Uncle Al managed to really word that tremendously well. Like, we kind of wanted to go off the vibe that Crusher sounds almost like a conspiracy theorist, but he's the only one that might actually be remembering everything. And we had an extended version that, you know, we could only animate so much, but we had like an extended one where, you know, it was like more banter with Crusher and Clump. And it would go on about, you know, Crusher being like, what, don't you remember the bear, the one with the backpacks? Like, what monster puts stuffs a bird into a backpack? The same one that fought the witch. And there was an inebriated squirrel. And I think this was one of my favorite jokes I managed to make it in, unfortunately, but I remember it's like, you know, Clump is like, you know, shrugging this off. It's like, what's next? Chameleon bat hybrids battling toads? And then Crusher, convinced that he's actually getting, is like, yeah, and there was also an operatic pile of and then it gets cut off with a second verse of the bard, and he's singing, it's been many a moon and too many a sundown. It's like I was like the best way we could like probably censor the word, but honestly, it was just so like we had so much fun with like the voices and like all the inside jokes and things that we worked with. I mean, truth be told, it's just a little something for everyone. We our big thing was like we were getting like target audiences from like both the Donkey Kong community involved in this, the original creators of like the games. And even some like animation enthusiasts, because we wanted this to just appeal to more than just Donkey Kong fans. It's just a bonus. We always think like if you're making a good product, it should be a film first, a fan product second. That's always been like my innovation with how things are. It's like if you walk in, you could appreciate it for what it is, amazing. But if you watch it a few more times, you might notice a few extra little things here and there. And man, so many people are just picking up all the nice little Easter eggs. And I'm wondering if people are eventually going to get all of them in time. Because, man, I'm already like tallying down which ones have been caught and which ones haven't.
I saw, because I spotted there's a pastiche of a Iron Maiden album cover. I believe it's Hallowed Be Thy Name. It's a pastiche.
Yes.
Yep.
Hallowed Be Thy Crim.
Yeah. That's and it. It's yeah. Actually got, instead of Eddie over there, we actually had
Sobek,
the Egyptian crocodile god Sobek. We kind of made a mention of it when Clubba was mentioning, you know, secluded like stones that could be secluded by Sobek. We kind of just figured, you know, I kind of imagine it's like the Imagine Slayer, like, you know, God knows what he's doing, but God doesn't exist in Donkey Kong. So
Kremlings have somewhat of a religion, so
yeah, I guess that's the closest thing we kind of figured. It's like, well, let's just put in as much crocodiles as we could. The growls from K. Rool when he's going through the lair, those are legitimate crocodile sounds that we got Resound to kind of work around. Stuart, he's if there's one thing he's bigger than over Kremlings, it's you know, reptiles and gators. So he's like knows all the sounds by heart and like all the different species and how they're like he made like a whole list theorizing which species were what of like each of the Kremlings. It was nuts.
That's dedication, man. That is dedication. And one of the things that I have to say about your animation style, Alex, is that I was just so blown away with the animation detail, the bounciness of it all, the weight and how it all just comes across so fantastically. It's, I know it's a 2D, 3D hybrid, but if I didn't know any personally better, I would have thought it was all 2D, and it's just incredible. It is so incredible. I see official videos of, I'm not going to mention who, and they look awful. And then here's you lot, especially Alex, when you make these videos, and they're like, holy crap, this is amazing. Why can't we? Thank you very much.
Yeah, it took a lot of work to put all this together, but we're pretty happy with how it came out. So, yeah.
I like to think that we followed. Thank you. I'm glad you like it. Oh, sorry. I was gonna say I like to think that we followed in the game's footsteps, the original DKC 1, 2, and 3, and made it 2.5D.
Yeah, true. It does kind of have that energy to it.
Because I do remember, because I'm old enough, I do remember that the graphics of Donkey Kong Country in the day were like, really like, oh, they were, these were made on the same computers that rendered Jurassic Park and all that. And yeah, you guys really did capture the style, because I recognized, oh, that's Clubber, that's Crusher. Even just from the games, I knew what they were, and you just captured the style so perfectly. And as said, it's just, I just find it insane that something so high quality can come from, well, yeah, just a bunch of really dedicated fans. I always admire the ambition of fans to create something with so much passion and enthusiasm. And I see official product and it's like just half-assed, and you're like, oh, well, that could have been better. And then here's a small group of guys on a fan project and it blows everything out of the water. And then I see the numbers on the video, I'm like, this should be doing like 4 or 5 times better than it is. That's my personal opinion. It's just, oh.
Thank you. I mean, for the size of my channel, it's doing pretty well numbers-wise. Like, it's definitely the most successful video I've released on that channel, so. It's been getting very positive reactions, so and that's enough for me, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, I think honestly, the Alex's like attention to detail and dedication to the craft really got the right people involved and to work with him. Like when it started out, me and Stuart were just trying to figure out who would be like the kind of animator we want to work with, this that understands, you know, like has their own like unique flair and style, but also understands, you know, the Donkey Kong, like we want to work with fans because it's like, you know, they understand like the material and know, like we want to give them like, you know, some kind of creative control in their regard on how they want to adapt. And that goes with like the artist, the sound design, everything that kind of comes in between. In Alex's case, when we first met him, it was when we saw the original reanimated entry of the Donkey Kong Country, you know, thing that you did. And me and Stuart were originally looking at it. It's just like, whoa, this is amazing. I really like this, you know, 3D, 2D kind of style. We should reach out to him. So when we started talking and Alex and me realized we're just kind of a little bit more local and managed to actually get together and chat about this more. I think the funniest thing was Alex was like, oh, this is an old one. I could get it updated. And we're like, what?
So, looking, it's weird to see how much like the style has evolved since then, because like you look back at that old video and the quality is much, much worse than what it is today. Like I think the road we've been on is really kind of like, we really kind of figured out what's working and what wasn't. So
yeah,
like it's funny to look back at that old one and think that like that's kind of what got me noticed, when now as I would say it's not really my best work, you know.
But you know, it wasn't just that though, because when we ended up working through with Curse of the Crystal Coconut, that got released, I mean, we were like, Alex was chatting with Napalm Records, the guys that you know, Alestorm was with, and for permission on using the music, because you know, if there's anything we kind of want to make sure is just like, we're not the kind of person that likes to, you know, look past credits and make sure like every amount is due where it needs to. So to be extra careful, you know, Alex contacted Napalm Records, they were A-OK with him doing the video. Next thing you know, the video comes out and yeah, it's like Chris, the frontman of Alestorm, reached out to Alex. He's like, yeah, so we saw the video and had no idea this was the thing. Could you make an official one for us? Is that how the story went, Alex?
Definitely.
PA Party White, yes, it's a really good video. I did enjoy that one as well. And I noticed that Crystal Coconut is listed on Alestorm's website as the video for Pirate Scorn.
Yeah, I noticed that too. like if you click on the links, they have their whole discography on their site. If you click on Pirate Scorn, it takes you to our video.
that's as unofficial as official it gets. It's crazy, but yeah, it's like the other crazy thing is when Alex was working on PARTY. Not only did you sprinkle some references to the Crystal Coconut with the scurvy and clump skull and the Congo Bongo DK Isle over there in the map, that was really cool. It was just like, when I saw that, I was like, oh my goodness, this feels canon, amazing. But yeah, it's like, I think the other amazing thing is, this was another one of those breaks we were trying to decide how to go about with their script for Return to Crocodile Isle. And what resulted in happening was we were kind of like at a bit of a, you know, bit of a trying to figure out how to go about with the script and the actor and all that stuff, because it was a very you know, new process to me. I've never dealt with, like, you know, contracts and you know, all these crazy little things. So, you know, it's like we had some very amazing pitching reps, and I'm glad that they were able to, like, accommodate with us to work with the talent. But it took a lot of effort and it was worth it. But yeah, it's like between this time, Alestorm reached out and wanted Alex to work on the videos. So we kind of mentioned, you know, we'll kind of figure out the internals a little bit more over here. You work on what you need to. He comes back and he's like, oh, by the way, so we have some additional assets we could use for Return to Crocodile Isle. And in some funny little way, Alestorm indirectly financed this project too.
I mean, I do what I can to recycle my assets to just kind of keep things efficient. So yeah, stuff from projects will always get upcycled into other projects if I can. Not say reusing them, but kind of reworking them to kind of save time and money.
Yeah, yeah. And then the third time it happened, it was Glory Hammer that reached out to you, because Chris was also in charge of that too, was he not?
He was kind of the one who reached out in regards to working on Keeper of the Celestial Flame, so yeah.
Yeah, and then that happened, like, right after. And this was after we finished the main animation. We were trying to figure out how to go about with the post-credit scene. And then you came back and finished the post-credit scene. And it was around this time we kind of joked, hey, maybe we should release it around the time of the Mario movie. And
Which we did.
We kind of did.
A couple weeks after. We almost got it around the same time.
But yeah, it's like, I'm not the kind of person that, like, I don't believe in, like, you know, crunch culture, but this was something that Alex eventually was really wanted to do, because I told him, okay, as long as you're not killing yourself here, and I don't have to call I don't have to call a hospital for you. I just want, and it's like, you know, I believed in Alex and his process, and we managed to get things sorted out. And I remember the weekend before, we kind of organized, like, a little screening in Toronto to just kind of watch it together with some other friends of ours that came down. I was just being able to, like, kind of see it in a private theater on the big screen. And it was probably, like, one of the most magical moments of my life over there. And then it finally came out on Monday with, like, all the hype and people surrounding it. It's just like, it was just nuts, just seeing, like, all the amount of attention and love and just, like, the quality all there from Alex. Like, again, this all stemmed from a simple Donkey Kong animation where it is right now, and just kind of led onto this whole rabbit hole trail. And I mean, it's kind of funny too, because in a similar case, the reason we reached out and wanted to go back with Ben again was the fact that we were kind of wondering what was going on with him lately, and we realized he was in a dub of a more recent movie in 2019 called Ice Princess Lily, and it was like it was apparently like a English dub of, like, the German Tabaluga film, so with the little dragon. Obviously, they were trying to cater more so towards the Frozen market, because that's what was, like, the highlight at the time of North America. So he voiced an evil Ben voiced an evil snowman named Arctos, and then me and Stuart just watched it and we're like, oh my god, this is still got musical it. Number should not is like, this movie should not have a villain musical number be this good. And he's aged like fine wine. He sounds fantastic. We need to get him involved in this, or, you know, double or nothing. Mm-hmm. So it's just like a whole crazy, honestly, a lot of stories about like how we managed to get everyone roped in together. It was like a whole bunch of lightning striking at the right time and all these things correlating, and just kind of came to the quality that it was. Anyways, I feel like I just kind of rolled into like a whole bunch of different topics. I apologize.
not complaining, my good sir. One thing I was going to say is, has Ben actually seen the finished product? Do you know what he thinks of it?
Ben?
Yeah, it was Benedict Campbell.
Oh, honestly, all of them managed to see it. Benedict was really impressed. He really liked the way the music went, and I remember during the recording session, we were kind of going through, because we were doing like a live recording session in like one of the Cherry Beach studios in Toronto, which I think is, they're like a really well established sound booth area known for like doing like, what were the bands again? Like it was like Rush, 50 Cent, Justin Bieber, they all recorded over there, and we were using like the same kind of rooms that they would record in for like some of the musical numbers. And I remember when we went through this, you know, it's like Ben is like, lives in Stratford, which is like an hour and a half away. And like, it's huge with like, you know, the Shakespeare theater, thespian stage kind of thing. A man who's had like probably 40 to 50 years of just theater experience and doing like all these powerful monologues and plays and characters. And, you know, he was going to drive down an hour and a half just to do some crocodile noises to some guys that don't really know what they're doing. So for the first 10 minutes, it was a little bit tense, just trying to figure out what kind of mood we went into. And honestly, it just ended up becoming one of the best recording sessions I've ever had in my life. The man just like struck like thunder and lightning by each note and every like emotion that we went through. And I remember one of the highest compliments was Ben mentioning that, honestly, this is better than most of the, this was better than like most of the songs that he was like singing through in the original show, which, huge compliment to us and Josh. And then singing like in final fruition, he adored it, and he mentioned that, you know, it's just like fantastic to be part of the project, you know, 23 years since he's played the role. Honestly, it's like, and that's the thing that I loved about this show and what kind of had to strive for. This, it's a nostalgic thing, yes, but if there was one thing that you could get out of the show despite the janky you know, visuals that, you know, made for some, you know, good AI art previewing, I'm sure. It was just like the sound department was something I always like appreciated. Like all the songs, as silly or ridiculous as they are, they're catchy, they're fun, they're just like having a good time with it. And all the voices I felt were so perfectly cast for the characters. I honestly enjoyed like the deliveries and the chemistry. These guys just like owned their roles. And when we actually went about with casting with all these actors and characters, is we made the rule that we're bringing everyone we can back, and anyone that is newly cast, anyone that's a new voice actor, they're doing a role that has never been done before. Like that's why we had the likes of like Clubba. He's never been portrayed outside of like Donkey Kong Country 2, where, you know, he didn't have voice lines. We had Clamp on because at the time we weren't even 100% sure Ron Reuben would be involved in this, who was Scurvy and Claptrap. So we kind of decided, okay, let's just make it Clamp on, his older brother, and get you know, JP involved in this, who's, you know, everyone was just like the casting process was like so great. And like, we've worked with it's either people that we've watched and understood and studied their work like crazy, or you know, on the other side, it was like friends that we've just worked so long and understood their ranges and the characters that they're able to like portray. And, you know, it just didn't feel like we needed much direction, period, because they just really went into it. But yeah, it's like going back to Ben, he really enjoyed it. Richard was a very fun, you know, experience too. Oh man, the story we have with him.
Oh, Richard.
He happened to be in Canada at the time, and man, the recording session was really something else. We got to see him in the flesh, and Al was there, who was, you know, who really liked doing like his own impression of like Richard Yearwood Donkey Kong from the show. And Richard managed to hear it and gave him a great compliment on that. And I mean, should I mention this part of the story? Because this one's a little bit funny on this end.
Yeah, go ahead.
So
the internet needs to know that it's out there and it exists.
It exists, and that'll be like
we haven't animated it yet, but
or it could just be straight up lost media. Who knows? Yeah.
I'll animate it eventually.
So what initially happened was, you know, it's like we worked with him, and he was in Canada at the time because usually travels between U.S. and Canada with like his different production stuff. And it was just great meeting him and working along with, you know, the lines in the script. It was just a very short cameo, but I just felt like it was neat. Like, even despite the fact it was coming from a TV, it would just been great to like meet the man himself and just get to work with him in a professional booth and just get things sorted. So it was really only a few lines. We had quite a bit of time still left with all this. So I remembered, I joked about this with Alex and Stuart for a while. And then I was just thinking, you know what? It's like, so it's a Richard went along the lines of, he mentioned if there's anything else needed. I was like, actually, there's one other thing you could record for me. Alex and Stuart already know exactly what I was talking about.
And, yeah, it was my idea.
Yeah, it was.
I turned pale.
So I ended up saying to Richard, it's like, listen, there's a well-known meme on the internet, and we were wondering if you could say this line for us. You may spank it once. And then out of the blue, Alex, probably like, Alex, you'd make a great agent for me or something, or some publicist. He's like, I assure you, it is not as dirty as it sounds.
Yeah.
So the look on Richard's face
is
like,
just an in-joke from the original show that he probably doesn't get, but...
But like the look on his face was the five stages of grief or something. He's like wondering, like I could tell, he's like, what did I just walk myself into?
Is this a trap?
So
I'm glad you asked, because I wouldn't have had the courage to ask him.
Right.
Well, that's the thing. I have no sense of courage. It's just thinking with saying without thinking sometimes. But no, he did the line. He kind of looked, just kind of laughed himself. He did the line twice, and then he's like, my agent does not know about this. So yeah, there's a part where Ben literally says the iconic meme, and something might happen. And also in Benedict's recording session was also great, because he actually swore in character. And
that was so fun to watch.
That's something fun we might also like include as well. It's just like there was the rapping segment specifically, because you know, we had to do like, we had to break it into bits because it was so good, and it's like all these crazy little bits we were working through. And yeah, it's like we kind of had to like go through like a few of the lines, and you know, it was like, you know, some flubbing because like we had to like do it, like we were doing it fast and we were doing it piece by piece. At some point, he was just, you know, King K. Rool doing that. Well, it's true, I won't deny it. And then he started doing like these, it sounded like K. Rool was doing some crazy Porky Pig now sounds. And then he just yells, ah, shit. And it was like, I was like, please tell me we got that. It's like, oh,
quick,
man,
save
I feel
it,
like
save it.
No, but like it was just a fantastic time recording him, and they just kind of saw the final product overall and like the passion and heart that went into it. Ben loved it. He mentioned that it was just great and he'd love to work with it again. Richard was really surprised over like the quality it turned out, and like was glad to have like been involved in this. Ron Rubin, who played Scurvy, the thing is, like, we were trying to get a reach towards him, but there were like some he was going through like some personal emergencies at the time, so we waited out for him to work with us, and we told him a little bit about the project that we did, and we kind of showed Curse of the Crystal Coconut. It's like, this, just to give you an idea of what we're doing, this is the animation where your original character voice, and he literally told me, I don't remember voicing this character. And he was like, are you sure? Because it's on your behind the voice actors and IMDb. It's like, no, I enjoyed working on Donkey Kong Country. I remember being Claptrap. I just don't remember being Scurvy. It's like, he was one of the best
characters.
How do
you remember being Claptrap and not remember being Scurvy?
Right.
I'm not sure, but you know, he eventually remembered, which was great. Like, we managed to confirm that, and he did the voice, and he saw it at the end. I remembered I remembered it's like, you know, he was there for like the opening showing and he was just like really impressed with everything that went on. And it was just like he ended up giving me a heartfelt letter afterwards about like how great of a project this was and how impressive it is, and really hoping I could go to places with this. Ron was like probably one of the more prolific voice actors that I grew up with. He was like Artemis in the original Sailor Moon dub, and Morph in the X-Men animated series, which I was also huge in.
Bloody hell, I didn't know that. Sorry.
yeah. I connected with Ron through Cal Dodd, the original voice of Wolverine, because Cal was back when this was before like the new X-Men animated series continuation was announced, but I heard he was going to Cal was going to a convention. I did like a interview with him back in my movie entertainment journalism days at like Screen Geek, and I got him to do like an excerpt out of Old Man Logan with the Wolverine voice, and a lot of people really liked that when it came out. So I reached out to him, and he apparently knew Ron really well, and just had me, and he just kind of helped me get in contact with him. So that's how we managed to get Scurvy involved for that last little bit, which I'm sure was like a wonderful shining moment for a lot of fans. And Adrian was super fun to work with as well. Clump, that was his first voice role too, wasn't it? Like he mentioned it was like his first voice role. And honestly, when we got the chance to like work with him, he was like, he had this great dry wit to him. Like it was just like hilarious to work with. And I remember when Tom, one of our other voice actors, was just doing like some sound checks for us to make sure the recording was going through okay. Out of the blue, Tom is like, "Hey, you were Jerry in Totally Spies." And he's like, "I am," in the voice. And it was just like in so much good fun. And we did the recording and the voicing, and he was really laid back, funny, like hilarious guy, had some great stories to share. And he saw it in the screening with his wife at the time, and he mentioned that it was just really fantastic. And I think he also forwarded the short to the original showrunner of the Donkey Kong Country series, and he was like, "Yeah, they were very impressed and they loved it." And he's just like, "Wow, that's I'm not used to this kind of attention." But I guess that's the best way I could kind of sum up everything is, the original voices really enjoyed being involved in this, and it was. Honestly, I had to like latch on like a few stories there because, oh man, there's so much behind the scenes stuff.
There is a lot
talking about. Oh man.
But that, again, that's half the fun of all these things is sometimes you don't hear these stories. I've said this to many people about these different episodes I've done. Sometimes you don't hear about these little behind the scenes bits and pieces, which makes the finished product more interesting, in my opinion. I think that's why behind the scenes featurettes are still so popular.
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't hear, especially with these, please no insult, but these smaller projects, you don't hear these things. You don't hear about these little ins and outs, little funny exchanges. And sometimes these stories all deserve to be heard. They all deserve to be told in one way or the other. And I'm sat here just in wonderment about this just wild rollercoaster ride for everyone, all of you. It just seems to be this madcap adventure just through this thing and then this thing, and this dominoes just off. It's just amazing to me.
You want to know another? There's another fun piece of trivia I'd figure that would be worth mentioning behind the scenes. So the logo for Return to Crocodile Isle. Yeah, you know where I'm going with this, Stuart.
Yeah.
So this was done by an amazing individual named Jim Wornell. If you know of Jim Wornell, you may know his experience in doing a lot of the graphics for between the 90s to like 2010s for a lot of Nintendo games, the logo designs. So he did the Ocarina of Time logo, he did the Animal Crossing logo, he did the Metroid Prime logo. I met him actually through the F-Zero project that I was initially going through, because at the time when I was talking about getting some of the original voice actors for that, one of them was Eric Kelso, the original Captain Falcon from F-Zero GX, to cameo as a different pilot. And I kind of realized this was like maybe about like 2 weeks before the initial F-Zero project came out. Someone mentioned on Twitter that they were trying to figure out who the original voice of like Mr. Zero, the announcer from the N64 game, was. And he reached out to, he found like, managed to put the sources together. And after like, I think 29 years or something,
they finally found out it was Jim Wornell who did the voice of the announcer, and I just reached out to Jim and said, like, hey, I'm doing a bit of an F-Zero project. You want to do like a small little voice thing at the end, just like as a little fun thing? And, you know, we got along immediately after that, and just afterwards, I kind of realized he was like, did a lot of the graphic designs of Nintendo. I was like, oh my goodness, you're literally the childhood artisan who made all this stuff for me. It's just like, would you be all right with doing the logo for us? And he did it first try. That was his first try doing the logo, and it looked fantastic. So that's as official as unofficial, as official as it gets in some weird way of the words. And he also actually helped design the, one of the other things I actually did was, one of my main jobs is working in promo products. Anything that needs like a logo on it, from like, you know, bottles, pens, power banks, fireplaces, like, we kind of do that. We work with a lot of different vendors. And one thing I did for some cast and crew was specifically for everyone in the cast and crew, and I'm trying to get around to shipping all these, but it's taking a bit of time. We designed one of these like cast and crew only like stainless steel bottles that are in choice of like green or black. And we actually had a label around it that was like basically alcohol, like absinthe. It was like the creme reaper, we called it. And it's kind of like, it's like literally what the bottles of, you know, the Kremlings are holding within like the thing. We didn't really get into the time to get to all the details, but it would have been like, yeah, that's like literally their version of beer. They're just like so accustomed to like the high percentage that just drink it down like it's nothing. And Jim designed the entire layout for it, like with like, you know, the, he did like, you know, the text for it. He did like a bunch of things. I could send a picture sometime, but it's really cool. And, he also helped design another customized thing that I got for some of my members over here, specifically the ones that like work with us the closest. So that would be like Alex and Stuart and like our voice actors, our composer. I got like a really, one of the vendors that I also worked with is called St. Regis Group. And they had like some fantastic reps that I've worked with before. So they kind of know me pretty well in that regard. They're known for doing like some really high-end product stuff, things from like, you know, filtered water bottles for NASA and you know, the writing and journals for Biden's presidential campaign team back then. But one of the things they're best known for actually is for their awards, like acrylic awards and like all these kind of crystals. These are the same guys that made the Oscars for the Academy Awards. And I got them to make a custom, like small custom, like little awards shaped like a crystal coconut, called it the Crystal Coconut Awards, and actually personalize them to like a few of the folks here and there. Alex, do you still have yours in your room?
Yep. One sec.
Yeah, see if you can show the bottle too, because this is something you got to see yourself. It's cool.
It's so cool.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh wow.
Yeah. It was. We had that little dash of green there, just like as a little homage to the green over there. But man, it was just a really fantastic thing we just kind of got involved in. And yeah, somehow we got the original graphic designer from Nintendo to work with this. He didn't work on a Donkey Kong game per se. I guess the closest was like Mario versus Donkey Kong, but like still a man of that legacy and caliber. It was just like an honor to have him involved.
It also it reminded me a little bit of I can't remember which one it is exactly, but it was one of the Monkey Island games. It was very reminiscent of as well.
Yeah, we've got Alex has gotten that quite a few times.
Yeah, especially on the party video, I get compared to Secret of Monkey Island a lot, which at the time of making PRTY, I had not played. I've since played it because like everyone kind of convinced me to check it out. But I mean, I definitely see the resemblance now, but at the time it was not an inspiration since I'd never played it before.
Were they making the game around that time too, like the new game? Monkey Island game?
They might have been working on it around the same time. Yeah,
man, they should have just hired you right after that.
So another thing as well is I've noticed that a lot of people I've talked to, they like the villains. They don't really care about the heroes. They like villains. And I was going to ask, why Kremlings? Why King K. Rool? Was there any just any particular attraction for them? Because you would think like a Donkey Kong fan film would focus on, well, Donkey Kong. You know, did you think that they were underrepresented, or is it just why not?
Stuart, I think you're the best person to answer this question.
Yeah, the Kremlings for a while now have been kind of the underdogs of Donkey Kong Country. They've kind of taken a back seat. And I mean, it's been, you know, 10 years or so since they've been in a game proper. I think Martin and I just kind of really felt, and Alex by proxy, kind of felt that, you know, we should induct them into modern, you know, DK culture and kind of revitalize them as a, you know, portion of DK lore. I mean, because you have K. Rool. He's been reestablished since the Smash announcement. But the Kremlings really haven't gotten that same treatment. So we kind of use this as a launch pad to be like, oh, hey, here's this thing. know, they exist. They're a huge part of DKC history.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of where go ahead.
No, sorry, I said the Kremlings were a part of Donkey Kong since Donkey Kong Country. Yeah, that I've always associated them with that, really.
Right.
And honestly, I just kind of feel like between everything, it's just like K. Rool has always had such an interesting adaptations to him. I mean, honestly, we kind of just mix both of the best parts from the games and animated show. Like, we love, like, the kooky, you know, over the top kind of amazing singing, like vibrato that he kind of brought to the role. Like, Ben was like our ideal King K. Rool voice. We couldn't imagine anyone else. But like, the thing is, like, if you look closely at the games, there's also, and I think it's also just the way that Rare kind of writes some of their black humor in like the games, like, that they make. It's like always like a little bit more darker, but I always felt like, and me and Stuart have always discussed this like back and forth, there I feel there's like something a lot more menacing with K. Rool. You're talking about someone who the whole arc of like King K. Rool has been an interesting one. He's not just like a, you know, weekly I'll get you in the princess kind of thing deal. First time around, he, you know, is like he's a tyrant, and, you know, like getting across and like invading the lands. He gets duped by DK and Diddy. Game two comes in, he thinks he could just get Donkey Kong out of the picture. He gets taken out by Diddy the kid and his girlfriend. Now he takes Diddy. It's like, there's absolutely no way these guys can come after me after this. He gets defeated by his girlfriend, Dixie, and
the baby.
Yeah, and a baby. So I feel like, and then he goes into like Donkey Kong 64, which I guess is our canon, is like 1, 2, 3 and 64 to that extent. It's like, he's like, okay, I'm trapping everyone. I'm destroying this island. There's absolutely
all of you
no
must
way.
Go.
There's no way they could beat me. He gets beaten at a boxing match. And one thing we always notice is like, we always like, it's like he has split personality or like dementia or like something, where it's just like every time he dons a new role, it's just like, it's his own way of trying to like, you know,
rebrand himself,
look past the mistakes and try and like get himself into this thing. And I'm just thinking, after so many defeats, and I guess in one part it's Nintendo not utilizing him properly, so, you know, they're the ones to blame for his depression for one end. But on the other end, I'm just thinking, after you're defeated so many times like this, it's like, what do you do? And I think what really branched this idea of ours is like, what if we kind of took a much more darker, grounded approach to this and had it where it's like K. Rool is it's just like you kind of see like almost like some kind of like villain, like a thespian villain, like the kind that you would see in like a lot of things. It's like a lot of psychological things that are going on in his mind, the dementia that we like worked so colorfully into like the kind of things that he has, or is like, what is he seeing, what isn't real. And we originally, like, our thought process was, let's make this into a Disney villain musical number kind of thing. We have so many inspirations, like a Radigan and Gaston, and Be Prepared was a huge one. Savages from Pocahontas, like all the colors and things. And the one thing is like, whenever there's the villains talking about their, like, you know, their grandness, their finest hour, it's like it goes from like a low point to a high point when they start the song. And what made this pattern really interesting is like, we took it a little bit longer. It's K. Rool kind of almost going into like a U-shape. He starts from like, you know, showing like his fear and like, you know, how intimidating his presence like with the Kremlings, and he kind of goes into like this big like, you know, fight with DK, the way he imagines him, because he's thinking, there's no way someone that goofy could be, you know, could have defeated me. I have to imagine him as like this huge stoic, almost Batman-like presence, which is kind of the direction we went with this. A lot of people did point out like the Batman Joker kind of chemistry the two of them had, and it was very complimentary, almost like a very bitter ex kind of thing. And it was just like, but at the very end of it, it's just like all in his head, and it's just like this very somber note it ends at. It's just like that perfect bang that people just kind of feel, oh my goodness, this is an ending. This just made me, this wasn't just any regular Disney villain. This wasn't just any regular song. This took us a rabbit hole. This told us everything we needed to know about K. Rool in a matter of, you know, minutes over there. And I think that was our strongest point.
You know, I remember I was pushing hard for like the dark ending. I know I remember I was the one who really wanted to end on a dark note. Mm-hmm. Even though we do have like the end credit scene, but yeah, that was, yeah. I remember really wanting that.
Yeah, and it was a great ending. At the same, it's like, and it was one that I would have loved to have stuck through too, but I kind of figured, you know, we kind of put this, I'm sure a lot of people would have been asking, well, he got into Smash Bros. Eventually, right? Which we kept the post-credits scene, like, especially to like our voice actors, a big secret. It was like, no one knew like exactly what was gonna go on, and well, the last game he appeared in, like, before Smash Bros. Was, like, Mario Sluggers, I think, like, 2018 or something. Sorry, like, 2008, and then he appeared in Smash in, like, 2018, I think it was. Which, you know, which resonates, which was our way of hinting, you know, it's been 10 years between that point. We even had, like, a few, you know, nods in the background. There was there's a Pauline presidential, there was like a Pauline Mayer campaign, you know, poster that mentioned she was running for 2017 when, you know, Mario Odyssey would have been that. And that was what would have connected. That was one of the little hints that showed, okay, this is the time period we're kind of setting at. It's like 2017, 2018-ish at least. So, you know, we kind of figured, you know, it was a good way to just, you know, at least give, you know, K. Rool a treat after playing dead. So it was like, you know, hey, let's just kind of, we kind of had Richard do like the small little thing with us, and it was like super fun. He completely forgot. It's just like that same doofy DK that we all see. And the one moment where like K. Rool actually speaks, it's like probably one of the best insults we've ever probably written. Stuart was a great mastermind behind that. Me and him were just studying like a lot of British comedy. We were watching like Blackadder, like the second series, and man, it's just like we kind of saw like so much of the personalities with the three leads, and with K. Rool, Clump, and Crusher. So that kind of gave us an idea how we wanted to write the scene. And yeah, it definitely felt like some really good British humor over there. And once that whole thing with the devotion and IQ line went through, the thing with the Smash reveal, it was just kind of like, you know, I want to imagine, like, I guess my takeaway would have been, this is, in some weird little way, I want this to be the canonical reason why it took this long for K. Rool to be into Smash. It was just a matter of Clump being that stupid, not realizing that Keith Crud Rool was his full name, and just kept sending it back. And one of the other jokes, I think, was, if you notice in Curse of the Crystal Coconut, Cranky's holding the Smash invitation. And the inside joke with us is like, you know, he's just been sending it to Cranky, and then that's been sending back to Nintendo, and then it just gets sent back, and Crusher's like forwarding to a different receiver, and just goes back to Cranky, and there's like, where's this supposed to go to?
I did notice the Pauline poster, and I thought, oh, is it just because, you know, they just haven't bothered changing the posters in that, you know, in that ship for ages? But now you sort of mention this, oh, hang on, yeah, that fits in. There is a timeline here. That, again, that's just, it's such an insane level of detail. And
we had a lot of our original artists work on this. I like a lot of these artists, like, I knew, like, based off of like either being like huge DK fans that we got involved, or personal friends of mine that I know would have like a great style, because I always like just including, like, you know, the little guys to like help kind of like, you know, bring a little bit more lore and life in the background, as well as like, you know, just giving their credit to do, like, yeah, the Pauline poster was a great example of that. We also had, like, you know, the Iron Maiden one. I'm also, like, there was another artist, he does like a great, like, Metal Gear kind of like that Yoshi Shinkawa kind of style to it. We actually got him to make the Wanted posters for Captain Scurvy and Captain Falcon in the background as well, which you know, that was also a really cool detail as well. Man, there's just like so many art stuff. What was your guys' favorites, Alex and Stu? Any personal ones that you like there? Or?
I don't know. There's a lot of good ones. I liked, the Wanted posters were really good. There was the Lion King parody painting that I liked.
Oh, God, yes. Brandon was fantastic. Brandon made this, like, and this was an idea we kind of conceived. It's like, we kind of had this idea as like all these different, you know, things in like K. Rool's lair. And it's like, one of them was K. Rool's like painting of like, you know, how it was like how we would have interpreted his birth. It would have just been like all the different non-Kremlin characters gathering around Lion King style and like on top Krim of like key. This little, yeah. And like this little swamp rock, he's being held up by Steve Irwin, the crocodile hunter.
Oh.
That was, yeah, you can notice it like in
walking down.
Yeah, if you notice, like, walking down, it's on the top right.
It's in a few of the backgrounds.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of crazy art stuff that we did over there. Amazing. And, I mean, there was, like, K. Rool doing the Punch-Out. Like, if you notice, like, as he's playing, like, the harpsichord.
Oh, yeah, that was another good one.
That was a great one, yeah. It's like, we kind of did it, like, with the Mike Tyson, Mike Tyson's Punch-Out kind of style, too, where it was K. Rool and Donkey Kong in place with their boxing outfits, where K. Rool would have been, like, 64 and... I mean, Donkey Kong was playable in like Punch Out for Wii, so that would have been his outfit. And, you know, we kind of had like a whole bunch of text underneath it that was like reminiscent to like the old Mike Tyson game. Yeah, there was just like a. Like, we just kind of let our artists just go nuts with what they were working on. And I know there was like. I know one of the things that's advertised in Mario Kart was like this sport drink called Burning DK Drink. And we had another one of our artists also work on having like. That, like, if you notice in like DK's treehouse, there's like a little poster of like Tiny Kong grown up, like almost like one of those like athletic sponsored posters that she's holding up, like the sport drinks that sponsors DK or something, right? It's a lot of like crazy little things that we just kind of put here and there, and it's like it gives people more reason to just watch it like 20 times or more to just kind of pick everything up. And these artists were just fantastic. I loved working with every one of them, and I mean, it's just it was fun. There were so many great ones there.
As for my personal favorite, it's kind of a toss-up. I really like what Chris did for us with the Mr. X puppet.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a big Mr. X fan.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, too. Yeah,
I'm a big fan of Mr. X in all forms and permutations.
You want to maybe explain who Mr. X is first?
Yeah, Mr. X was a working title name, a working name for the early version of what would become Cackle from DKC2.
Okay.
His design was changed drastically. I don't know if it was due to graphical limitations or what, but he was originally wearing a kind of like a navy military kind of clothing, like pea coat almost. And he had a captain's hat, and everybody, you know, back before the game had actually come out and released, the old Nintendo Power magazines were a thing. And in that, I remember, even as a kid, my cousins got a subscription to that, and I remember reading through there and finding that picture of Mr. X, and then never seeing him in the game whenever I played it proper. And I was like, for years, where did this character go? What is there something I'm not doing correctly to fight this boss? Or, you know, and then years later it came out, it's like, oh, no, he's just a... He was an early version of Cackle, and we redesigned him heavily. But yeah, I just kind of got attached to that character, and I feel like there's a lot of like mystery behind it that you could use. And it's kind of cool. But as for favorite art piece, it's kind of a toss-up between Chris's submission and I really liked the thing that Shiza did for us.
The Iron Maiden. That one was like, so detailed, like even at the bottom, you could, like the crowds were like perfectly like she drew like pretty much like, the silhouettes of everyone in the crowds, and you could recognize the different enemies.
If you zoom in on her artwork, you can actually zoom in on the crowd and you can see Neckies flying through the air, you can see Kongs, you can see Kremlings, you can see it's pretty much the whole thing.
Yeah,
and then go ahead.
I was just gonna mention, I think my favorite little tidbit with that is because she was also like a big fan of Cruncha from Diddy Kong Racing, and that's what we did. It was like Cruncha and the Toxic Offenders, so we're thinking, well, we can't exactly make a model of Cruncha, so we just had him there almost like having his own like metal band, and
He's on tour.
The reason it was called the Toxic Offenders was because that was one of the cheat codes used in Diddy Kong Racing, where all balloons were green, like Cruncha. So we kind of figured, you know, this kind of sounded pretty badass. You could tell how much stupid amount of thought we put into like the smallest speck of each scene over here at points. And poor Alex probably had to deal with us, you know, going back and forth how we wanted this little corner over there, you know, portrayed while he was just wanting to get things working.
One last little detail about that piece of artwork, and this is kind of what makes it my favorite, is that when I was commissioning it from Shiza, I specifically chose the title Hallowed Be Thy Name as kind of the play on words that we're going to do, Hallowed Be Thy Creme. The reason for that is because David Wise has gone on record saying that Hallowed Be Thy Name was the inspiration of the Gangplank Galleon theme, K. Rool's theme from the first game.
Well, oh my goodness, I got another one to add on top of this for music.
Yeah, go for it.
So, I know, I'm sorry, we're just gushing
Don't
over
apologize, it's fine.
So another cool little tidbit over here is and we worked with Tom Schalk, he fantastic voice acting friend of mine, and he was able to work with us on doing the voices of Clubba and Clef, which was an original character that was supposed to just be an unnamed bard, but Stuart decided to be a little clever with the names. So the intro that he's singing is like, oh, spare me an ale and I'll tell you the story. The notes that are sung off that song are very loosely, people are strange by the doors. And the reason we bring that up is because that was also one of this track inspirations made for David Wise's music. And that was actually the title screen music for Donkey Kong Country 2.
I'm impressed. I am so impressed.
We're fucking nerds. I'm sorry.
don't need to apologize for it. We all have our own little nerdy ambitions. I did remember one thing. When K. Rool goes away from the auto playing piano, we see some sheet music.
Yep.
And
oh yeah,
I did notice. There's Take On Me, Pirate Scorn, there's Love Is a Golden Banana. That's the other one. And then Peaches. How late in the process was Peaches added?
Because I mean, we had done that all that animation had been finished a long time ago. But after the Mario movie came out, I kind of just did some touch-ups on the background of that scene and kind of recomposited it. So even though that was probably done months ago, it did get some touch-ups a few weeks ago.
Alex kept this information from us. I should just be noting this.
Yeah, I just added it in one day.
Because that's really relevant, because you're sort of playing it as, oh, well, if Bowser can have a villain song, why can't King K. Rool?
Exactly.
It's the amount of detail. It really does, you know, it's like, put it on the biggest screen you can and just watch it again and again and again, because certainly I have. And definitely I've watched Crystal Coconut more than my fair share of times. And even in Crystal Coconut, there's just little bits, like you said, with the cranky with the smash letter, and there's other little notes and bits. And I just really enjoy the level of detail in all of this. And you guys sort of tell me this, weaving these tales of, oh, this happened, or this happened, this is connected to this, and it just boggles my mind how many hundreds of, you know, if maybe thousands of hours you guys have all put into this.
This is our way of telling, this is our pilot pitch, please let us make a show, Nintendo.
I remember a comment from someone ages ago, and I think it was kind of one of the driving force behind Martin and I. It was something along the lines of, like, a Donkey Kong Country show will never work. It's a show. It would be a show about a stupid ape that does nothing. And I was just like, no, 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 no. You clearly haven't played the games.
Never seen the original show.
There is lore.
Do you think that King K. Rool could come back in some form, maybe in the Mario movie sequel, or do you think it's just going to be you guys pushing forward the Kremlin revolution?
I mean, I think we already raised the bar to where it needs to
be. We've already tipped the scale a bit.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I would say yes. I think it's just like, I mean, for one, the Kremlings are long overdue, and it's like there's a clear interest in them. He came back in Smash Bros. With such high praise. It's, you know, a lot of people consider that one of their favorite reveals. Like Seth Rogen has hinted of a Donkey Kong movie, which I can't imagine who else would you put in the villain outside of that. And everyone's just been like, oh man, it's like, I wonder what celebrity they're going to put in. And just like, meanwhile, me and Stuart are just like, can they just get Ben Campbell?
Please, just hire Ben.
Please. But like, I mean, if there was some higher talent and if he was in good health, I think like Tim Curry would have like milked the role really well. Oh, so Tim Curry has always been like my ideal kind of Black Shadow from the F-Zero games. Like that's who the voice like Stuart based it off of, like the dubbing thing. But if he did have a shot at King K. Rool and he was still in good health, I would love to have heard his take on it.
Oh my goodness. So as the time is marching on, one thing I do want to ask you all is that, are you going to do any more?
I'm always open to doing more.
I mean, from my end, it's, I jump between F-Zero to Curse of the Crystal Coconut to this, and it's just been like a huge undertaking of just like working and so many nights here and there. I think I just like gonna take myself a little bit of a break at myself recuperated like mentally and financially a little bit. I've had to like work my main job in corporate and also taking time off doing random gigs of background work here in Toronto. So I think I might as well just mention this. You could probably thank The Boys season 4 for giving me this much work and for helping fund this too. So but it's just been like a lot of crazy stuff kind of going on, and I'm just kind of waking up like every day realizing, oh, I don't have a project to worry about anymore. I should just get my life straightened out right now. So I don't know, I'm just gonna maybe take some time, maybe write a script. As far as I would say for like my end, unless like there was like a big committed like serial that Nintendo wants to pitch to us before Doug Bowser comes down and decides to give me a cease and desist like personally through a helicopter helicoptering into my house with a personal cease and desist, that's when I know I made it. But no, it's like if they did propose us to like work on something like long term and have us like work with some creative input and like, you know, all the money in the world, I would love to do something. But part of me is also just interested in trying some other gaming properties that haven't been around in a while. There's like a couple projects I really have in mind I'd like to get down the line, and after that just kind of work more so with my own IPs. But honestly, I'm just kind of in this young stage where it's just like the fires of passion are just like kindling hot right now. I just want to go out, see what I can do, let my, you know, nostalgia and appreciation kind of work with the way it needs to, and just kind of make experiences and, you know, connections to whatever I work on down the line. But I mean, if there's like some help, I would love to work with like a Donkey Kong Country thing again. I just don't know if I could just take I just think it's like in this case I want to let someone else kind of take the chair with me. I feel like my interpretation of K. Rool is like already set sail. I felt like it was on the high note I wanted it to go on. But I know Stuart and Alex might think differently on their end.
I mean, I got plenty of my own projects that I'm working on, because like animation is my full-time job, so there's always more work coming from me. But no, I'd definitely be open to working with these guys again, especially if it's more Donkey Kong stuff.
I don't know. I don't want to say too much, but yeah, there's definitely interest.
I mean, you already wrote like an entire encyclopedia of lore.
Yeah. World that we've made, yeah. So. There's a lot of ideas in my head that I want to get out. And I'm still very adamant about that. But it's really up to the cards at play. So we'll see.
we'll definitely have to see. Well, as I said, it has just been over an hour. I do not want to keep you guys for terribly much longer. I just want to say again from the bottom of my heart, thank you all seriously for spending your time with me this evening and you chatting with me. It's always interesting to hear the perspectives of any project. And yeah, I do appreciate that you all sat down with me and had a good old natter about all this. And I really hope to see more from you all in the future. I wish I had an ounce of talent that you guys had. I would love to be part of something like this. And I'm always in awe of guys with such creative passion, just raw talent from all of you. And I'm not trying to inflate your egos, I'm being honest. It's, you've got talent. You all are so fantastic. And I really hope that all of you continue to make more fantastic work in the future. I really, really do.
Alex, please, you're making me blush like a schoolgirl. No, but like genuinely speaking, I appreciate your patience just reaching out and just hearing our side of the stories and all this stuff. This was just a passion project in and out. I know there's like, it takes like a lot of dedication and days, and you know, we weren't without our stresses with like all the different kind of stuff that we sorted through. But at the end of the day, I just am so proud of everyone in this project. And regardless, I just feel this was like a huge team effort, and it couldn't be there without, you know, our voices, our animators, our sound effects folks, our artists, just everyone that helped piece this together. And it just means the world to me that I was able to just help bring out the best in people into like this huge spectacle of over a big crocodile guy that's like a bad guy in a monkey game kind of thing. Seriously, it's like there's just so much that I love the community for, and what we are able to like make over here. I'm still not used to all this attention that we're just getting. It's a little bit
deserve
nuts.
It. You all deserve it. Seriously, you deserve it.
But seriously, I just want to reach out, specifically mention Alex Stewart. You guys are just fantastic with all this, and I like Alex. Every bit of color that you brought into this world was shaped to such perfection, and I cannot believe it came to this quality. You're
making me blush now.
Like a tomato, I hope. But seriously, you were fantastic. You were seriously patient with us. This was our first time doing like this kind of animation, like working with animation and scripting. So honestly, we were just like slipping on banana peels like throughout this whole time, pun intended.
It really felt like that.
Yeah. And Stuart, just working on this with you, you've always been like hugely passionate about this. And I feel like one of the main driving forces to making this to what it was just you wanting to bring this kind of story to life, the kind of ideas that you had. And that just like really attracted me to go all in for this. And I really hope like what I was able to do was... I just really hope like what I was able to do was able to establish everything you wanted to say about the character and what it means to you. So I just want to thank you for giving me this chance and being there for me.
Martin, I'm going to cry. I'm sorry.
We're crying. It's a pleasure and honor working with you too.
Oh man.
That means a lot to me, man. Yeah, no, it turned out exactly the way I wanted it. Like it went better than expectations. So you outperformed.
Thank you. Also, I'm sorry if I was just like bouncing and like talking most of the time. I just like feel so proud and just want to gush over every little detail and thing about the project. So if I seem like completely like bouncing off walls with everything that was going on, yeah, sorry guys.
No, you're good.
I like bouncing off walls. Don't worry about it. Any last words?
Well, to sound like a threat. No, I just meant like anything you want to say. Like I was just gonna say, you know, you could follow you could follow me on my production Twitter at bootlegdubprod on Twitter and Instagram. Yeah, just shout out to all the furries and scalies that have just been like, you know, adamantly watching our stuff millions of times. Like I don't get you guys, but I love you. You're amazing.
I'm Alex Henderson Animation. I mean, if you're watching this video, you've probably already seen the video on my channel. So You might already know that, but in case you don't, Alex Anderson Animation on YouTube.
At this point, they're probably wondering what we're talking about, but
yeah.
You have to go this far?
Yeah.
What's this in?
My name's Stuart A. Hudson. I'm a voice actor. I do voices. I was the voice of Kaboom, Crusha, and several others. Swanky, I believe. And then my personal Twitter is at LMG1, and that's spelled out ELEMGEEWUN on Twitter.
We get it, Stu. You're a Transformers nerd.
I know.
I am too.
Thank you all for being here. Again, if you like what I'm doing, please consider liking and subscribing so I can continue to make more in the future. This is Kraken, signing out.